Hey, it's Callie, and you're listening to the 42nd episode of the Hippie Haven podcast. If you're new here, I release an episode every Wednesday about living an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle. I want to meet you where you're at, so we cover all sorts of topics, like how to make less trash, composting, urban beekeeping, backyard gardening, secondhand shopping, starting an eco-business, and so much more. My goal is to inspire and enable you to take action, both in your day-to-day routine and on a larger scale of community activism, because I believe that together we will make a difference. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Hippie Haven podcast so that you automatically get each new episode right when it comes out. Today's guest is Lindsay Manderson, co-founder of The Zero Market, a wildly successful zero-waste store in Denver, Colorado, here to share with you how she started a zero-waste store and how you can too. You can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on the website hippiehavenpodcast.com/042. This episode is made possible by Bestowed Essentials, my own zero-waste business. We have an online shop in a retail location in Rapid City, South Dakota, where we offer ethical and eco-friendly home goods to help you reduce your trash and your impact on the planet. All of our products are natural, vegan, cruelty-free, palm oil-free, and we remove 1 pound of trash from American beaches for every order placed on our website. You can support my 100% female-run company by getting your zero-waste essentials at www.bestowedessentials.com. As always, thank you for helping me keep the mic on. What's the biggest hurdle you faced before starting Zero Market?
Biggest hurdle before opening in that process was figuring out where all of the products were coming from and how I was going to get those products zero waste themselves. That's one of the weirdest things about running a zero waste store is that we're not zero waste as a store, which is really frustrating at times, but there's really nothing that we can do about it until our suppliers change their ways. I think with most retail businesses, it's a lot easier because you have representatives, you have distributors that you can go to that just give you pages and pages of options for products that you purchase. But with a zero waste store, we had to seek out all of these pretty new products, or the tried and true, you know, that have been around for a really long time, but there isn't really one central place where you can go to look for these products. So it was about 2.5 years of sourcing all of these products and sourcing them sustainably too, which it was frustrating and time consuming and just part of the process. But yeah, that was definitely a huge hurdle. That was probably the biggest one.
And what steps have you taken both with your vendors and behind the scenes in the store to try to be as low waste as possible?
It's really about creating those relationships with the vendors and letting them know where you're coming from and that you're not just a regular retail store, but you have this very specific mission that you're working towards and that it's your entire store's ethos, basically. And without their cooperation, then it just wouldn't work. So really getting to know them and getting to know the owners, the people behind the scenes at these individual places, and getting them on board. So we've had quite a few of our vendors change the way that they've shipped, the way that they pack their things, even like the packaging that they originally would come in, the product would come in. They would go out of their way to change that so that it fits our store's values. But yeah, definitely building relationships is a huge thing as a zero waste business owner.
And what's like the biggest problem that's come up since you've opened your store? What have you had to overcome?
Well, our original concept was a zero waste grocery store, and we have had to change that concept, just tweak it a bit so that we can be open and have at least several options for people to live their lives with less waste. But food, I mean, that it changed everything with all the health codes and then the loopholes that we were having to try to find to jump through to just make it happen. It was just too much. We're still on the path to opening a food store, but it's just taken us so much longer because of all of the rules and regulations around that. That, I mean, that's been a big disappointment to a lot of our customers too, who have been waiting for a food store to open, a zero waste food store. But yeah, that, and I mean, occasionally we will still get, suppliers will send us their product and it'll be covered in styrofoam peanuts, or it'll be triple wrapped in bubble wrap, and then we have to reach out to them and remind them where we're coming from, and that it can't happen in the future, otherwise we have to find a different supplier. So that's been pretty difficult too.
And what are some of those health code rules and regulations, you know, for somebody who's interested in wanting to start their own zero waste food store in their area? What should they be aware of? How do they work around, or not work around, but work with those rules?
Yeah, bulk food is really tricky. There's a lot of opportunity for contamination, so there are a lot of rules to prevent from happening. There is a new health code here in Colorado just within the last several months, or just under a year, where it prohibits customers from bringing in their own containers, their own, even their own cloth bags. And they're trying to prevent contamination for people with allergies, gluten especially, and other things like peanuts and stuff like that. So for us, we were coming up with a system that is a bit like a loophole, but instead we would have a deposit system. So the code says that you have to purchase the container that you're getting your food in from the store that's selling it, so that it's guaranteed to be sanitized and completely sterilized. So we would do a deposit system so that people would buy the jars from us as a deposit, put down a deposit, and then if they bring it back, they can exchange it for a clean one, or they can just get their money back. So that's one little thing. But I mean, as far as the bulk bins that contain the food, they're very specific about what the material has to be, how they're attached to the wall, or if they're on casters and can move around. Just so many little things. I mean, it's like a novel, basically, of all of the codes that you have to follow. So it's a headache, but it's doable, I think, once you get into it.
And when did the Zero Market open its doors?
Well, we opened our current location in early 2017. But before that, we were at a temporary location in Denver for about 6 months. And that was the Night Bazaar. Before that, we opened in 2015. We were doing every weekend for about 8 months in just north of downtown. So people were refilling since 2015, which has been pretty great. But yeah, we have walls and a roof now. Great at our current location.
What resources did you wish that you'd had available during your startup phase?
Oh, everything. I feel like there was just no one to ask any of the questions, not just zero waste related, but business related. I mean, I took a couple courses for opening a small business, and I just felt like there was so much information that was given to me that wasn't relevant to opening this specific kind of store, because there really hasn't been a store like this. Just all of the logistical things. I mean, where do all these things come from? And how do you do inventory? What's the correct point of sale system to use? How do you go by weight, or do you go by volume? I mean, there's so many things, so many questions that I had. At the time, there was one zero waste store in Austin, and it was called Ingredients. I think they're closed down now, unfortunately. But I mean, they were so busy at the time that they didn't have time to answer my questions. So I just had to figure it out on my own. And there's a lot of trial and error. So, I mean, just everything. Taxes is a huge thing. I didn't even think about how crazy taxes would be and how much of a money sucker it would be. we tried to make things so easily accessible for people and realized that from a business perspective, we couldn't do certain things. But I don't know, it's crazy. it's so broad, everything from beginning to end. It would have been nice to have all those resources.
Did you create an official business plan?
I did. I started with a business plan template from the internet and quickly realized that it wasn't going to work for this concept. And so I went through like 10 different versions of what a business plan was for us. And somehow came to this weird Frankenstein business plan that we ended up having just before we started really diving into, you know, this is going to happen, we're going to do it. So now we have this plan. And it's funny too, because business plans, it's like the general skeleton, the basis, like the foundation of what you want your business to be. But looking back at the business plan now, things have changed so much that it's like the business plan is almost for a completely different business. So business plan needs to change over time as you change your ideas too. And I think a lot of people get stuck on the idea that it needs to stay what you originally did. As long as you keep your foundation and like your basic ideals for what this store is, things are going to shift a bit.
What business skills do you feel like you've mastered throughout all of this?
I don't know if I've mastered anything. I've mastered stress and anxiety and being.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things that I just never thought that I would have the skills at this point in my life. I think I am really great at taxes now. I never knew how difficult that would be.
Oh my God, can you do mine, please?
I said, I haven't mastered them. So I think just the organizational skills of keeping track of all of the different suppliers and inventory and learning all the systems of running a retail business. I feel pretty confident in that area. I still have a long way to go though. I haven't mastered anything. It's all every day there's something new that comes up and you just have to kind of go with the flow and learn from it and can't beat yourself up about it.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't be great at everything. Everybody has their limitations. They have things that they're good at and they have things that they're not good at. What was the first big task that, like, where you recognized that and you decided to outsource it to an employee or a contractor?
I am a control freak. So I was running the store basically by myself. My husband was there helping with the day-to-day, you know, ringing people up at the register and stuff like that. Up until last year, it hasn't even been a full year since we hired our first employee. And I realized that I was trying to juggle too many plates or spinning too many plates or whatever the phrase is. I was going to smash all the plates though if I didn't hire somebody. So that I think the first thing was letting go of being at the store and being the face of it every single moment of every day. I truly love our customers and our community, and it was difficult for me to hand that off to somebody else to, you know, to talk to people and do all the refills and stuff like that. I think also making products. I tried making all the products in the very beginning, and I didn't have the time for it. After, you know, we still sell out of so many things that we make in store because it's so hard to keep up and it's still just me making the products. But, oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, I'm still in charge of like the website and all of the other stuff, but I do have an accountant, and that was one major thing that I realized. I'm never going to master this. I need somebody who's a professional. I need to hand that off so that I don't just completely mess everything up and then lose the business because of it. So really important things like that, I think, need to be handed off almost immediately.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I came to the same realization recently and tried to hire an accountant. And unfortunately, it didn't work out with her. So I'm trying to find another one now. And
it's hard to find a good
money
one.
Money for me is like one of the biggest stresses. It is. And finding someone, it's really important to me that I find somebody who isn't just doing work for a paycheck, but is genuinely committed and invested, not necessarily in the business, but at least in the lifestyle. So, you know, I want the people that I'm working with to be similar to me. I want them to mm-hmm. have the same passion that I do. So yeah, finding an accountant is definitely high on the priority list, because the monthly bookkeeping and payroll and mm-hmm. monthly, we have to pay sales taxes monthly here. I'm not sure if it's the same in Colorado or if it's like quarterly or whatever, but
yeah, it depends on how many sales you do, but yeah, we do monthly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much involved, and I've just never been a numbers person. So
yeah.
That's a good thing to pass off if you aren't a numbers person.
For sure.
It's not something that you want to mess up. So yeah, pass that off.
That's one of the things.
Have you?
Yeah, you definitely need to pass that off.
Yeah. Have you ever consulted with a business coach?
Very briefly, and it was super helpful in the moment, and I really don't know why I even stopped it. It was actually just in the last couple months, just because I feel like I have so much going on and I'm stretched so thin that I just am not sure priority wise which one I should be taking care of first to make sure that everything continues to go, you know, as smoothly as possible. But yeah, I think it really, having a business coach, the person needs to get you and needs to understand where you're coming from and what your motives are. I had met with someone a few years back. It was actually close to the beginning of Zero Market, and they were so confused by the concept and tried to convince me that it was going to fail and that I should pick something else to do, and was just really, I don't know. It was a really disappointing experience. So I obviously never went back to that person. But more recently found somebody who believed in our, you know, our whole model and really supported it and could see the potential in how much this could grow and could possibly be in every city one day. And that was really inspiring for me to hear things like that. So, hopefully when I find a little bit more time, I can get back on that business coach train.
On that note, if you've been thinking about starting a zero waste business, or maybe you've taken the first few steps but are feeling overwhelmed or unsure how to grow, I'm really excited to finally have the time to offer zero waste business mentoring. From making our own products, to growing a successful online zero waste store, to opening the first zero waste store in the state of South Dakota, I know what it's like to start and grow a zero waste business from the ground up. I first started Bestowed Essentials at age 23 while on active duty in the U.S. Navy. It was self-funded out of my own paycheck, no investors or loans. I don't have a business degree or previous entrepreneurial background at all. I just figured it out on my own as I went, through a lot of trial and error, sweat and tears. Now we're a team of five and we're growing so quickly and have become one of the most popular companies within the zero waste field, and I want to help you succeed too, faster and easier than I did. So I'm now offering one-time coaching calls or a six-month membership where you'll get weekly goal setting and accountability calls with me, and be able to text me your questions or concerns around the clock. And you guys know me and how important accessibility is to me, so there's no wild price tag attached to this. It's incredibly reasonably priced and based on how much profit you're making. So if you're ready to start and grow your zero waste business, email or DM me today before my limited availability fills up. And with that more recent business coach, what was your most valuable takeaway from that experience?
That I don't know everything, that I am not as in charge as I think I am, and that I do need help. I think that was the thing. I really think that I have everything under control most of the time, but sitting down and going over all these things that weren't even on my radar, that was pretty eye-opening, and it was very helpful to have somebody point that out for me.
And now for the big money question, how much were your startup costs and how did you fund those?
So we started really small. I started with only about 90 to 100 products that we were doing on the weekend markets. So startup costs weren't that big. We did a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo back in 2014. And we were asking for $30,000. We got about $26,000. After all the fees, it came out to be about $22,000. That was enough for me to figure out our branding, our demographics, where we should be at location-wise, and then the startup inventory. It doesn't seem like that much now. Since now we go through, that's maybe like a week and a half's worth of ordering products for us. So it's definitely changed, but we grew slowly. So starting off small, taking all of the profits and injecting it right back into the business, and then just purchasing more and more products to grow. I mean, you can start tiny. You don't have to be a millionaire to do it.
And how long did it take for you to start making money, for you to be able to pay yourself, and then for the business to be profitable overall as well?
I started paying myself last year, so it took about 4 years before I felt comfortable taking any money from the business. I shouldn't say taking, because I was earning it, but it got to a certain point where I could no longer have a full-time job and be doing this on the side. So I had to quit my full-time job, which meant that I needed to make money somewhere. So it was only until last year that I started paying myself, but the business has been profitable for the last 2 years. The concept really took off here in Colorado and people love it. And I mean, it's been great. And the amount of growth has been staggering. It's so hard to keep up with because of how quickly we're growing, that it's sometimes a little bit scary that we're growing too fast, which can be detrimental, but I think we're doing right, keeping up with it. But we're opening our second location this year, and I mean, it's only up from here. So it's been good.
And how did you balance having a full-time job with starting this business and having a family for several years?
I honestly don't know. It's crazy to think about how I was teaching full-time and running the store last year. I mean, I had my husband helping during the day while I was at school, and I would immediately go from school teaching to the store and close the store, and I was there every weekend, and my poor kids didn't really see very much of me for a couple of years, but I mean, they would come and hang out with me at the store too, so it wasn't the best, probably the most exciting life for them, but they're such good kids, and they're all about the zero waste lifestyle, and I don't know, somehow you just have to persist, you know, you just have to keep going and just get through the really rough, time-consuming you know, hurdle of time before you can get to a comfortable place. I feel like that's with any new job that you're fully invested in. But yeah, two full-time jobs I do not recommend on top of parenting. It's not easy. Definitely a lot of medication, a lot of therapy. That helps.
How do you think your passion for zero waste and running a zero waste business affects like your kids' childhoods as opposed to like some of their classmates and their peers? Like, are your kids, do they feel like zero waste is normal because that's how their lives is? Or do they like go to their friends' houses and be like, oh my gosh, they make so much trash? Like, do you think there's a difference there between them and their peers?
I feel like they're already the weirdos at school because they're also vegan. So they just, it doesn't seem to bother them at all. They're so individual that they have such individual personalities, and they just don't care what other kids are doing. They're interested in it sometimes where they're like, wow, you know, my friends bring so much trash to school. Like, they're for lunch, their lunches, their everything is individually wrapped in plastic baggies that they end up just throwing away at the end of lunch. And it doesn't really affect them anymore. I think it did at first when they first started going to school and they saw that people would eat, you know, pepperoni cheese pizzas. And then they would also have, you know, the kids that brought their lunches. Kids are curious creatures anyway, so they're going to ask so many questions, and I don't think they really notice too much of, you know, those differences now, just because they know that everybody's different. They know that people make their own choices when it comes to what they eat or how they live their lives, you know. It is, you know, when they go to birthday parties, their presents usually look different than all the presents that the kids are getting, because they're wrapped with, you know, paper bags and string instead of, you know, wrapping paper and tape. We also have to usually bring them a vegan cupcake that they can eat while the other kids are having, you know, all the confetti covered birthday cakes. I don't know. I think kids are pretty, resilient. Yes, really resilient. So they'll just keep on going with what they know, and I don't think it seems to affect them much. I think they're into the whole zero waste thing. They call me out every once in a while if I, you know, I got a free bag of chips from the, you know, people across the hallway or something. They're like, Mom, but what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with that chip bag when you're done with it? How are you going to repurpose that? You know, so I think they like to have a little bit of fun with it. But yeah.
Yeah, that's such a great way to grow up, being conscious of it right from the start, instead of, you know, a lot of us have to unlearn years and decades of how we grew up and how we just what we thought was normal. And so this is normal to them, and it's setting them up for their entire lives to be able to think about things, think about what goes on behind the scenes and making the most sustainable choices.
That's, yeah, and that's, I mean, that's all we can hope for. We can teach them how we're living our lives this way and hope that they continue with that when they're adults. Of course, that's not always a guarantee, but I'm sure they'll be curious about, you know, things that they weren't allowed to eat when they were younger, or maybe they'll slip up and just go through a binge of plastic use for a year or something. But hopefully we really try to instill the rationale behind it, and all of the creatures and the, you know, the places on the planet that are affected by our choices. And I think they're pretty aware of it. So,
and do you talk to them about it? Do you have those conversations about like why you choose to live a vegan and zero waste lifestyle, and why it's beneficial for the planet?
Yeah, absolutely. They're like field trips at school. You know, if they go to the zoo or they go to the stock show, we usually try to plan something else. So, just recently we took our oldest to the animal sanctuary for rescued farm animals instead of her class went to the stock show. And we had a conversation about it so that she wasn't upset that she didn't get to partake in this field trip that her classmates were going on. And after the conversation, it made complete sense to her, and she didn't want to go to the stock show. Her teacher tried to convince me otherwise, but I mean, she was the one who stood her ground and said, I don't want to go. It's going to make me sad. My kids, the school that they go to, they do something called Passion Project every year. And it's something that they research from almost the beginning of the year until the very end. And they do so much research into it. I mean, my oldest is in fourth grade, so it's not like it's a thesis or anything like for a doctorate. It's fourth grade, but my 10-year-old last year, she built a whole website on zero waste and what you can do to use less trash or produce less trash. And I was so proud. It was one of those parent moments where it's like, oh my God, I may be doing something right. This is amazing. Because she got to pick the topic. So I think with all that education, you know, teaching them why we're living this lifestyle, that one really got into her head, and she's really proud of it. And she really thinks that she can help her classmates and those around her. So that was a cool moment.
Now, moving back towards your zero waste store, what do you feel like is the biggest mistake that you've made, and what have you learned from it?
I hate to keep going back to it, but taxes. I completely blew them off for a while because I didn't think that it was that important, and then come to find out later that it's one of the most important things. I had severe anxiety over getting caught up for a long time, and I think just if somebody had told me how important it was to be on top of it from the very beginning, I think it would have been a lot different. That was probably the biggest mistake that I made, was not taking it seriously from the very beginning.
And so, like, what records and paperwork do you need? Like, how can somebody else avoid that and try to stay on top of taxes from the beginning? What would be your tips?
Having a good record of everything. I mean, from how much you are spending on purchases for inventory, all of your expenses, keeping any receipts that you have. I try to avoid receipts like the plague, but for taxes, it's unavoidable. I try to get digital copies of everything, which it's much easier to keep track of anyway, because I lose everything. And making sure that if you are making sales, that you have a very good record of those sales. And just a record of everything. That's just something that I was so lax about in the beginning. I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm selling things at this market. And, you know, I didn't realize how important it was to have a good record of all of that from the beginning.
My next question for you was, with your online kickstarting, what recommendations do you have for somebody who's interested in kickstarting their own zero waste store?
I really feel like I should have had a mentor with starting a crowdfunding campaign. I really didn't know what I was doing. I was basically just spamming everybody's inbox that I could possibly think of, you know, like government people and any kind of celebrity, like to try to get them to help get the word out. I'm sure I was doing it wrong. So I think, you know, taking an online course or like reading something about it or getting a mentor to help you get through that process, it's so much more complicated than you think it would be. It's almost like you have to be a marketing person 24/7 for the entire time your campaign is running, plus the month leading up to it even starting. So I highly recommend getting help with getting the word out and making sure you're doing all of the things right.
And what influenced your decision as you were picking out your first permanent storefront location?
That kind of, the opportunity approached us. So it all kind of happened organically. We were searching for a space for about a year and a half, and we're just coming up short. We were afraid that the places that we could afford were too far off the beaten path, that we weren't going to get enough foot traffic of people that weren't aware of zero waste to be able to make the store work. If we were depending on the zero waste community alone, it just, with the market here, as in like the commercial market, it wasn't going to work. The community isn't large enough yet to be able to sustain a business. So we needed that foot traffic of people that were aware of what a zero waste lifestyle is, so that we could, you know, reel them in and educate them and make them a customer for life type thing. So we had some people reach out to us when they had heard of us and our project and knew that we were looking for space in Colorado. And that was when the Big Wonderful, which is the weekend market, they reached out to us and wanted us to be part of their event. But they also wanted us to help them be a zero waste event. So it was a bit of a trade. We got a booth at the market every weekend for 7 months or 8 months, whatever it was. And we built zero waste stations for them. We taught them how to compost. We basically were raising awareness at the event for being zero waste. So that those two things helped us get started with just getting our word out in the community. And then from there, we've had developers and property owners and just so many people reach out to us wanting us to be a part of their location, their project, whatever they're doing. Like they have an empty retail space, they want us to be a part of it. We get it all the time, and it was pretty great. We had options to choose from of people that genuinely wanted us to be a part of their thing. And that's how the Stanley happened. So we had the owner, basically the guy who came up with the entire idea for the Stanley Marketplace, which is this giant airplane hangar in Aurora that they've gutted, and then they turned it into a local business shopping market with 50 local businesses in it. He came into our pop-up space in another part of Denver, and he secret shopped us, and he wanted to make sure that we were legit, that we weren't like crazy people, and he wanted to like see what our whole business was about. And then he approached us and said, we want you to be a part of the Stanley that's going to be opening, you know, at the time it was supposed to be a year from then. And we were not interested at all. We're like, that's too far away from where we want to be. It's way out in Aurora, which is we wanted to be central Denver. Aurora's like 20 minutes out. And he said to just give us a chance. Come on out. I'll take you for a ride on the golf cart and I'll show you the space. And we did, because we wanted to ride on a golf cart, and then the rest is history. So now we're, go ahead.
And the Stanley is such a cool place too. Like the entire concept, I wish every town had something like that. There are so many unique businesses, and it's great to be able to support all these different local artisans and vendors right in one area.
Yeah, totally agree. Just from hearing about it from, you know, there's this abandoned airplane hangar in Aurora that's going to be a marketplace. It sounds weird and risky as a business owner, and we weren't into it. And I am so glad, I'm so, so glad that we decided to take that risk and to be a part of it. It's one of the coolest places to visit. I mean, and it's full of so many awesome businesses too, and it's such a really tight-knit community, and all the business owners are, they're all like, you know, it's just a really close-knit community. It's a really, really cool space. So, I mean, I wish that there was something like this in every city too, because it's a great opportunity for small businesses. And it's also a really fun destination for all the locals.
And what factors do you take into account when you're sourcing products?
I'm very wary of greenwashing. There are so many products that are out there that say eco-friendly and green. And I mean, if you dig a little bit deeper, you find out that they're not at all. I like to know where the product is being made. If it's, you know, fair, not fair trade, but, you know, like their workers are being paid well and treated well. And it's definitely a plus if it is made locally. We are a completely vegan store, so everything has to be animal free, cruelty free. So that is a huge thing. And of course, we don't purchase anything that is wrapped in plastic or contains plastic, with the exception like our spray bottles. It's impossible to find a spray bottle that does not have a plastic spray top. So like that, but we're pretty picky about where our things come from and the quality.
What is your number one business goal for 2019?
Besides opening a new location?
Well, yeah, I guess that's a pretty big one in and of itself.
Yeah, that is number one on the docket. We are looking at opening two spaces this year. So we have quite a few things on our plate, but I think that, and for me personally, it's being able to hand off more of these tasks and jobs to other people that can help me out so that I'm not drowning as a business owner.
And where do you see Zero Market in 5 years?
We're hoping to expand to other cities too. Right now we're focused on covering the Denver metro area, and then the year after we're looking at branching out into other cities in Colorado. And then the year after that, we're looking at going to other states.
To what do you attribute your success so far?
Stubbornness, probably. Not giving
up.
Yeah, no, when things get really difficult and overwhelming and frustrating, just not giving up, finding a solution. You have to pave your own path. I mean, in this business right now, at least, you just have to find a way. I mean, sometimes it seems so impossible to figure things out when there aren't really any mentors either. You know, you have to figure it out. So not giving up. I think that's where my success comes from, is not giving up.
Yeah. And I don't think that this is for everybody. It does take several years, likely, before you're going to be able to pay yourself. It takes, oh my God, like 16-hour days, 7 days a week when you're really pushing hard to get up and off the ground. So it's not for everybody. It takes so much, stubbornness. Like, there's definitely a passion that you need to have.
Most definitely have to have that passion.
It takes a lot of passion.
And people who think that, I've had people come in to the store saying, oh my gosh, this is such a successful business. I bet you are making so much money. I mean, I think they're coming from a different place of seeing it as a moneymaker. We're not in it to make money. We're in it to spread awareness and to just to educate the general public of the problems that we're having with the planet and, you know, plastic pollution. And if you're in it for money, you're probably not going to be successful, because you really need to know the foundation of the whole reason for this store concept. So yeah, you are very correct though with the amount of time that you need to put into something like this is immense. It's so much time.
Yes. And one of my big pet peeves is, I mean, you mentioned like greenwashing earlier, and going hand in hand with that is seeing like all of these online zero waste shops that pop up where it's just like a website that's selling other people's stuff, and they don't have any sort of about page. They don't tell you who's running the company. And that just frustrates me so much, because zero waste is about a lot more than just buying stuff package free, or, you know, trying to use as little plastic as possible. It's about trying to support your local economy, or at least supporting small businesses. And so I think it's really important when you're buying anything that you should be buying from companies that are passionate about it, and that you at least know who's running the company, and you know their name, you see their face. I think it's important. You know, I want to support companies where they're proud of what they're doing, and they're not just sitting there trying to get your money from it. They're really trying to do something else. But that's just my own little pet peeve, because I just see so many of these online shops popping up, and I'm like, these people are just in it for the money, and that's not the way to go about it.
Yeah, exactly.
My last question for you is, what is your number one tip for living an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle?
Oh boy, there's so many. Number one, I think just being true to your own ideals is really important. Don't do something because it's trendy. Do something because you're passionate about it. If you're passionate about something, everything else that follows will be so much easier. There'll be so much less pressure on yourself to succeed at being zero waste if you're truly passionate about it. I mean, there's all the tips that you can get about, you know, bring your own grocery bag or bring your reusable mug, but I really think it's so much deeper than that, and it's about staying true to your goals and not giving up.
And that's a wrap. I'll be back next week with Brendan Fitzgerald, CEO of Planet Protein and the other half of the Sustainable Duo, with his life and business partner, Carly Bergman, who's been on the podcast before herself. Brendan will be sharing his journey from marine to vegan activist and business owner, his thoughts on toxic masculinity and meat eating, plus debunking a few of the most common myths around veganism. If you find value in the Hippie Haven podcast, please share it with someone you know who'd be interested. You can leave a review on iTunes or whichever podcast app you're using, and also consider buying me a virtual cup of coffee to keep me going. Each podcast episode takes around 6 hours to create, and episodes cost about $50 each out of my own pocket. These costs include file hosting, editing, transcription for people who need or prefer visual content, and my own time of researching, drafting, recording, proofing, and promoting. Visit buymeacoffee.com/Callie, that's CALLEE, to support the work I'm doing with a $4 cup of coffee. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart for spending this time with me, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.